Week 8. That's week 7. That'll be week 8 enough, soon enough. It's week 7. Time to go around the AFC North. Talk about two of the three teams that have a shot to go to the playoffs. And there's us. But we fleeced the Bills, apparently.
Is that it?
Our 1-5 football
Laser
team,
eyes?
We fleeced the Bills. Laser eyes, man. Way we go to Baltimore. Bob Haney, 105.7 The Fan in Baltimore, as they get ready to take on, Tampa Bay on Monday night. Oh, who they're playing against. Hi, Bob.
Hello, fellas. What's up?
Is Derrick Henry still the best in the league?
He's playing like it. I mean, this guy's on a mission to prove that you thought he was washed up or he and Lamar couldn't coexist, that everyone was wrong. I mean, he's on pace to rush for almost 1,900 yards, pushing 15, 20 TDs. He's still a stud. I mean, at 30 years old, will he have this juice later in the season? I mean, it doesn't look like he's slowing down anytime soon.
Well, the offense in general, Bob, when you've got the running game going like this, does it look like it's changed drastically from maybe what has been there in the past? Are they really going to start riding Henry that much more, like a workhorse?
Well, last couple of weeks, Lamar's been throwing a lot because they've been in kind of these shootout situations. Cincinnati 2 weeks ago, and Jaden Daniels kept Washington in the game last week. The previous two games before the last two, Lamar had only thrown the ball 33 times combined, but he's been airing it out over 26 against Washington, over 40 against Cincinnati. Lamar mentioned the fact that this year's offense is efficient like it was back in 19, where you have the great running game, which they do again, and they're able to successfully complete passes. Lamar's completing almost 68% of his throws, only two picks. And, you know, Andrews had 9 targets in the, first 3 weeks of the season. He's had 9 the last 2 weeks with a touchdown, 7 catches, 8 Flowers is putting up some big numbers. They're kind of pick your poison, to quote Lamar and Derrick Henry, offensively right now.
Bob Haney, 105.7 The Fan in Baltimore. Is there a possibility the Texans could send you guys Stephon Diggs at all?
I don't know if that would be a move that would fit Eric DaCosta's profile, because I don't know if they really need a receiver right now. As we said, Zay Flowers stepping up big time. Rashad Bateman is now making a play or two a week. Likely Andrews, you're stacked at tight end. I don't think wide receiver right now would be an area of concern for them. The secondary's been the big concern for Baltimore, 31st in pass defense. Marcus Williams has been terrible at the back end, and Brandon Stevens, you know, he covers well, but his ball skills leave a lot to be desired. Those two players are the ones taking most of the criticism from the fan base here lately.
So that is the Devontae Adams thing. It does nothing for you, terms of like going out and getting like, not that you take the Jets seriously or anything, but like in an arms race, you know what I mean?
Nah, I don't think wide receiver, even Cooper to Buffalo, you know, is making anyone lose sleep over here. Ravens could use like another offensive lineman, maybe a guard like everyone else in the league. But secondary, pass rusher, they just got Ngakoue up after he got a sack against Washington. Secondary, in their inability to be consistent, is kind of a concern. Look, they brought Dean Pease out of retirement to be an analyst or an advisor, excuse me, for Zach Gore. That's where the problems lie. Outside of run defense, where they're number one, they're mediocre, less than mediocre, in pretty much every defensive category. Right,
I'm going to have to text you a joke that a person had about Dean Pease during coming in hot years ago, which obviously I'm sure you know where it would go. Bob Haney, 105.7 The Fan in Baltimore, joining us as they get ready for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers on Monday night. We go to Cincinnati and Mo Egger, ESPN 1530 in Cincinnati, as they come on up here at 1 p.m. on Sunday to face our Cleveland Browns. Is it because the Browns are 1-5 that you may be feeling different, or is it, this team's weird, they're kind of like a ghost, a boogeyman for us? How do you take this game and getting ready for this game as a Bengals connoisseur, Mo?
I think you cannot ignore the recent history between the two teams, which is obviously very heavily tilted toward the Cleveland Browns. I think if you were going into this game feeling like, dude, all we've got to do is show up. I mean, first of all, I think that's how a lot of people felt when they played the Patriots at home week 1. Didn't work out. I think it's how a lot of people felt when they played the Washington Commanders, who have turned out to be a lot better than people thought, but I think that's how a lot of people felt about the game against the Commanders week three. Didn't work out, and so this team simply isn't good enough. I mean, despite winning on Sunday night, to just feel like they can show up and beat a wounded team. That said, I do think there is a great sense of opportunity here, not just to get a victory, but to twist the knife, extend the misery, and if there is any hope in Cleveland, and you guys could speak to whether or not there is, extinguish it once and for all. But, yeah, look, the Browns have had the Bengals' number. Joe Burrow hasn't played well against Cleveland, and there is a sense of if it can go wrong against the Browns for the Bengals, it will. And so we'll see if it does on Sunday.
Hope for what are you talking about?
I have no idea. You know, I mean, I have no idea what you guys are clinging to up there. But I guess one might convince themselves if they can get this win on Sunday that perhaps they could use it as a jumping off point. And I know Bengals fans are hoping that they extinguish that possibility on Sunday.
Would you feel better or worse if Jameis Winston were starting for the Browns?
I would feel worse from the standpoint of, I mean, first of all, the quarterback play can't get any worse. And secondly, I don't know. I guess you would feel like, you know, maybe the locker room would be energized and maybe you would get a more spirited effort by the Cleveland Browns. I think with Deshaun Watson, you sort of know what the team is. And I'm sure you guys have talked about this a ton. I've got to think it's so deflating for the rest of the guys to see the continued insistence on playing Deshaun Watson. And so what I would fear would be Jameis plays, and that sends at least a small surge of energy through the team that translates into a spirited effort on Sunday.
How do the fans feel about the season Joe Burrow is having? He's had some big numbers in some games, also made critical missed throws and interception that's pretty memorable so far this year. Overall, the Joe Burrow experience.
I think fans look at the numbers and go, boy, he is having an MVP caliber season, or at least a season in line with when he was an MVP finalist in 2022. And if you look at his numbers, you know, we did this exercise going into the game on Sunday. If you look at his numbers relative to 2 years ago, he's having a better season. But at the end of the day, all anybody cares about are wins and losses. And I don't think anybody looks at their record and says it's Joe Burrow's fault. But it does temper the enthusiasm and the appreciation for the season the guy has had. And so, you know, I think if you ask most Bengals fans to talk about Joe Burrow this season, they'll say, well, he's having a nice year, but so what? It really only matters in the context of winning and losing, and the Bengals have done more losing than winning so far this year.
Mo Egger, ESPN 1530 in Cincinnati. Well, do they find that Zach Taylor may be on the hot seat, or is that just an impossibility because of Mike Brown?
I would be, I'll say this. They examined whether or not they should fire him after his second season. You know, Mike Brown issued a statement 2 days after the season ended saying Zach is coming back. He has never done that. So that would tell you, and I could speak just from, you know, the standpoint of having to talk to people in the organization, it was on the table. Do we bring this guy back for year three? Since then, obviously, he's won 5 playoff games. I think I've said this to you guys before. If Marvin Lewis got 16 years without winning a playoff game, Zach Taylor might get 80. But I don't think it's outside the realm of possibility that maybe there are some coaching staff changes if this goes poorly and if the losing continues. What that might mean for Zach Taylor in terms of a leash for next season, I don't know. At the end of the day, the guy who wields all the power is number 9. If Joe Burrow goes up to Mike Brown's office and says, I want a new head coach, chances are the Bengals are going to have a new head coach. And if Joe Burrow says defiantly, I'm only playing for Zach Taylor, then Zach Taylor probably has a job for life. But I don't know that it is as cut and dry as, well, Mike Brown's the owner and he doesn't fire anybody, because it was discussed. And if it was discussed after year two being so disappointing, I think there is a point that they could get to this season where it would be discussed after year 6.
Mo Egger, ESPN 1530 in Cincinnati, as they get set to take on our Cleveland Browns Sunday, 1 p.m. You can hear it here, right here on your flagship home for Cleveland Browns football, 92.3 The Fan. We head to Pittsburgh. Chris Muller, 93.7 The Fan in Pittsburgh. Is Mike Tomlin really going to have Russell Wilson start on Sunday?
Well, I sure think so, and he's making a mistake.
What is he thinking? Seriously, is that like, as it's like, oh, he's never going to really be committed. Why would he? Why? Why would he do that?
I don't know. He seems to think, here's the only calculation I can make. If he's actually doing like the, you know, back of the napkin math here, and there's not just, you know, oh, I promised this guy before we even traded for Justin Fields that he would be the starter, and so I'm going to uphold that promise, which is probably the real reason that he's doing it, but that's a stupid reason to put somebody in the lineup when you're 4-2 and your quarterback hasn't been great, but also hasn't, by any stretch of the imagination, been terrible. The only thing you could possibly say is that maybe he thinks Russell Wilson is going to improve their passing game so much that it's going to offset all the things they lose by putting Justin Fields on the bench, which is broken plays can turn into 15-yard runs, which is you can call design runs, you know, stuff that he just does well, that he's been doing well really the whole time he's been in the lineup. You got to think that Russell Wilson's going to turn this into like the greatest show on turf. Spoiler alert, he's not. They also are going to be without their best lineman at least this week, maybe next week. That's Zach Frazier. He's been rock solid. So you're going to tell me that with a guy making his first NFL start at center, and then the rest of the line has been kind of iffy for the majority of the year, that you're going to put a less mobile guy who doesn't throw over the middle, who really, I would say last year, his numbers looked good but wasn't that great of a player. You're going to put him in and think you're going to get better? Good luck with that, man.
Is there something about Mike Tomlin, his conservative tendencies, that he's looking at Russell Wilson, someone who at least will run the plays, who will know the reads, as opposed to Justin Fields, who may still have difficulty at this stage of his career doing that stuff?
Probably in his head, yeah. Like he thinks, and Wilson probably should have more command of the offense, I guess, because he's been around longer. Tomlin loves the whole idea. He said this yesterday. He loves the whole idea of just giving veterans a lot of leeway and, you know, Russ can get up to speed and get on our moving train here very quickly and so on. Russ holds the ball longer than any quarterback in the league just about. He and Fields were like the two top guys in the league last year. So how quickly is he really reading these defenses is what I would want to ask Mike Tomlin. I think he's going to be better than Fields in play action, but that's about it. Like, I don't know what kind of agency they're going to give him or what kind of opening up of the playbook could possibly happen that would make them think that Russell Wilson's a better option. About the only thing I think he definitively does better than Fields is throw a really good deep ball, but Fields throws a pretty good one too. And last I checked, George Pickens is about double covered every time he goes down the field.
So no Davante Adams. Pony's wrong again. He ends up going to the Jets, who will be playing you on Sunday night. I imagine Davante Adams, now that he's going to be magically healed, will be in the lineup for the New York Jets for him. Is there another wide receiver you would go after this whole George Pickens mess? I imagine that's going to be taken care of here within the coming weeks.
Pony's wrong again. What does that mean? Day that ends in Y?
Yeah.
And, I want them to go look at Darius Slayton from the Giants. Pretty cheap, pretty solid number two type guy, profiles like that. I've said Slayton from the beginning, I think would be a solid player. Pony got on my case yesterday and said, well, he's not going to be a super difference maker. Well, how many of these guys are? Like, maybe Adams would have been fine. Maybe Amari Cooper, who wouldn't have been traded here because it would have been intra-division, would have been. But Slayton is a solid player who is a major upgrade over anybody they've got that isn't George Pickens.
I'm looking at the running numbers for Pittsburgh, and it's kind of back to the problems you guys had had, you know, before really last year. I mean, Najee Harris, 3.9 per carry. Jaylen Warren, 3 yards a carry. Is that something that they can fix by the end of the year?
Harris has been that guy. I mean, he had probably the best game of his career against the Raiders. Warren's been hurt, so I think that explains a lot of his problems. This is very sad. They really miss Cordero Patterson right now. The guy's had like 20 carries or whatever it is. Every one of his carries has looked like the best carry they've gotten from a back this year because he knows how to run an Arthur Smith system. But their offensive line, I think this will be their sixth or seventh different combination because of injuries, so they've got no consistency going on that front, and it's just been a problem. I mean, they're back to playing this incredibly tedious style of football more often than not, where they're relying on the defense to force turnovers. The offense is plotting. When Fields is out there, it at least has his running dimension, but they just are continuing to – it's like if you guys were watching, you know, one of those Utopia pictures of like flying cars, right? And then the Steelers, that's everyone else's offense. That's like Detroit's offense. And then the Steelers are just discovering tools made of stone and maybe thinking about discovering fire one of these days.
Have you seen our offense? Have you seen our offense?
Dude, when I read things like worst quarterback of the millennium, when I read things like getting into Jamarcus Russell territory. Can I ask you a serious question?
Our lead scorer? Let me tell you something. Our lead scorer
is a co-host
on this show on Tuesdays. He's a safety.
McLeod, he's got. No, I know.
Okay.
What does your co-host do?
Yeah.
He probably thinks he could coach the team better. Let me ask you guys something seriously, though, because I've wanted to know this. Stefanski says, no, we're going with Watson. Do you guys think that Kevin Stefanski in his heart of hearts wants to do this or is being forced to do it by Jimmy Haslam?
There's no chance he wants to do this anymore.
Like, you guys actually might be interesting if Jameis Winston's in there. He might throw four picks in a game. He also might throw six touchdowns in that same game.
If he wants to do it, if he wants to do it, if it's, well.
It's a fireable offense if he objectively as a coach wants to keep playing this guy. Like, I think everyone basically wants to send Deshaun Watson's NFL career to the glue factory, do they not?
Whoa. I mean.
We still have some defenders in town, believe it or not. Very few, but they still are very vocal.
I just feel that they are.
What are they defending him on? Like,
that's everybody else's fault. It's a coach's fault. It's a bad system.
Yeah, but that's a lot of minority. Come on. Those folks are out of touch with reality. Look at this.
He was 11-12 in the second half.
Right.
Is he calling in under several different assumed names to defend himself?
People think he has several burner accounts. I think that those are fans messing with people.
Go ahead. What's the one burner account?
We might have a George Pickens burner account in town. His name is Michael Brewerly on Twitter.
Oh, we have Leroy Jenkins. Leroy Bickerstaff. That's what it is. Leroy Bickerstaff. Chris Muller, 93.7 The Fan in Pittsburgh, as the Steelers get set to take on the Jets on Monday night. Coming up next, Nick Chubb. 216-474-0092. You have Nick Chubb's letter in front of you. He penned a letter to the fans of Cleveland with the Players Tribune. As he makes his triumphant return on Sunday. The good thing that we got going for us.
There. I have to say, I've never seen him open up like this. So this seems to be a really good forum for him to share his thoughts. I've never heard him talk this in depth about what it means for him to be back on the football field, what it means for him to play in the city of Cleveland. He talks about the gruesome injury, goes into detail about having Pittsburgh Steelers praying over him.
Could you imagine how terrifying that would be?
Yeah, that's when he's like, I know how serious this is because he's been through it.
He starts
out his piece with, really, it happened again. And so he didn't know. He said when they first took the cast off after being, you know, immobilized for so long, 9 weeks or whatever, he said the atrophy that took place, he said his leg was so tiny that he's like, I don't know if I'll ever walk the same way again. So, I mean, for him to come all the way back and play in this game this Sunday from that point in time, pretty remarkable. I mean, if you weren't pulling for Nick Chubb before, obviously you're not a real Clevelander, but I think even people outside of Cleveland be like, man, what a great story for him to get back on the field.
Who isn't a fan of Nick Chubb? There's no way no one's a fan of Nick Chubb. Everybody loves it. If you don't love Nick Chubb, I guess you just don't like life. Nick is quintessentially, I mean, the guy that people love Cleveland for, Cleveland sports for. And you wish you always had more Nick Chubbs just because it's like, hey, man, I'm sure he's about his business. And I'm sure, and he should. He's a running back. He was on the call. He should count every single penny that he's owed. But it's also, there's a professionalism there. There's obviously the talent that's there. This is an area, I mean, you go back, this area loves running backs. We've been starved for talent, but we've been starved for running backs for... Oh, gosh, how far back you want to go? I mean, we had the one Jamal Lewis season.
I remember the Jamal Lewis. He was a Pro Bowler that
year. A little bit of Ben Gay, a little bit of Ruben Drones.
Peyton Hillis.
Peyton Hillis was a very nice season. We loved Peyton in that season. Loved him. Got that helmet from him.
But it was a bunch of one-offs, right?
Yeah, it was a bunch of one-offs.
We were like, hoping for William Green.
Exactly. Nothing was sustained. Nothing was sustained there. And so Nick has been sustained. And it makes us appreciate him that much more. What do you expect from Nick Chubb for the rest of this season? 216-474-0092. I'll open it up to everybody. Because he's coming back. This is going to be a remarkable moment. Now, I have highlighted what's going to happen afterwards because I don't have a really good feeling about it. I hope I'm wrong. But I don't need to discuss any of that. I don't want to discuss that. I want to talk about Nick. Nick is a positive. Nick makes us feel better. Nick makes us feel better about the right now and hopefully for the future. But we'll see. I want to discuss Nick Chubb. And how great he is.
Yeah, and it sucks that it feels like, with the trading of Amari Cooper, that the season's over before you even get Nick Chubb back. That's the one debilitating thing. We were hoping that this would be some huge addition. You know, who's getting a better running back than Nick Chubb at this stage
of the season? It would be a boost to the team, not something that 3 weeks ago we were hoping was going to save the team after another loss. Now the horse is already out. Like, you've lost four games in a row. Sorry, I hit the table. You've lost four games in a row. You're 1-5. Like, that's it. And when you trade away Amari Cooper, I mean, they could say whatever they want. They're, you know, they're trying to keep people interested, but it can't be addition by subtraction. We know what this season is, and this is the beginning. But here I am going and lamenting into that, not talking about Nick. I don't want to put something that's unfair on Nick and say that, well, you know, he's got... No, I want to see what he's available to do, because he may be introduced... We could see him introduced on Sunday, and then he maybe gets a handful of carries. But I also wonder if he weren't... If he weren't activated, I would worry about his entire future playing the sport.
Yeah.
So they're going to activate him. They activate him for that reason, partially. But also, I wouldn't have him out on the football field if he couldn't defend himself and he couldn't play to any sort of a reasonable level with the NFL. I don't know really what to see or really what to expect, I guess.
Well, the one thing is, it will not be for a lack, no matter what the outcome is, it's not going to be for a lack of working hard. Is this guy that colors so much of his piece with the Players Tribune, mm-hmm, on putting that work in, going back home and putting that work in, how his crazed high school coach made him put the work in when he could have been signing up for badminton and other things, you know, the last period of the day in school. Like, it just goes to show how important that facet of his life is. Man, he really opens up here. He says high school coach was pretty much saying, man, I hope they don't pick you. Don't go there. Like, so, and that's why he goes to explain how much he loves Cleveland after all these years, that they did take him, that it did work out, that he was such an incredible player for him, and that he even says, it seems like at times Browns fans are the only ones who weren't seeing it as just a business with him this year. You know, you hear so much about that injured player. You know, don't pay him. We had fans saying he should get every last dollar. And looking back, it's a shame he had to take a pay cut at all this year.
What Nick would frustrate, the discussion around Nick would frustrate me so much, because you would have, and we would have these discussions 2 years ago. Now it's because of the injury and because of what he means to the franchise, and because they're 1-5 and he's the one we're looking forward to. It's changed his conversation completely. But I remember, I mean, I would get red-faced, like ready to pound my head into the wall, because there would be this gaggle of smarter-than-thou football people. Well, running backs don't matter. You never pay your running backs. Running backs don't matter in an offense. I go, no, running backs matter to this offense. Well, you guys are an analytically driven football team. You know that running backs don't matter. Actually, this is the franchise that gave him a contract. They do believe that Nick Chubb matters to their offense. We see how much that the prime Nick Chubb did matter to this offense and how important he was. So you have to look at the player, not specifically the position. Derrick Henry means something different to the Baltimore Ravens right now. There's plenty of guys out there that are just fine enough running backs, and they could take advantage of better blocking systems. They could take better offensive lines, things of that nature. For Nick, Nick's a special player. You mentioned it so many times. Hey, he falls forward, he can get you 3.5 yards and get you at least going on second down and ahead of the chains instead of behind. So that's always something that you're paying attention to. Like, I always got so frustrated with the general, just broad conversation about the running back. No, there are guys who are different. And it's never been perfect with Nick here. There was always this give and take, this tug and pull, because of what the rest of the team was doing. I mean, Nick's had to deal with a lot of craziness over his time in Cleveland. And because he's just been someone you could always set your watch to, you could always count on, I think he means something different for a lot of fans here. And I think he means something different to multiple generations. I think the kids who saw him love him, and I think that the parents who see him now, they love him, and they'll continue to extol his virtues for years and years to come, for multiple generations to come. I mean, he's the best running back we've had in this city since Jim Brown. No offense to Ernest Biner. Ernest Biner's great. No offense to Eric Metcalf. Eric Metcalf was a tremendous all-around player. I mean, this is the best running back we've had since Jim Brown. And yeah, I don't even think it's an argument.
I wanted to add this, too. He said, you want to hear what the Browns told my agent, by the way? This is in the offseason. When my agent called me to tell me the news, he said, I've never actually had a front office tell me anything like this. But they said that part of the reason they never entertain cutting you is because of how much you mean to the city.
Yeah. Look at where do I need to say it? Like, what else is going on around the franchise? And we've dealt with bad quarterbacks before. There's a segment of fans who don't like the guy. Nick Chubb covers for that.
Yeah.
Because
people
love Nick Chubb. Whatever percent of people like the quarterback and don't like the quarterback, that's whatever. 100% of Cleveland fans, no, 99% of Cleveland fans love Nick Chubb. The other 1%'s dead. So they don't even know anymore. Like, that's it. They love the guy. And so they counted him so much, and that was where you had to make, it was a good long-term business decision for them to work something out with him. It builds goodwill with the fan base. I don't know what he's going to give on Monday. I've only seen him walk around. Like, I've seen him work out in practices on the videos and things like that. I've seen him walk around the facility. I thought he looked great a few months ago.
Yeah.
Like, we don't know these things.
We were wondering if he'd be ready at the start of the season.
Yeah, I'm no doctor. I thought he looked great a couple of months ago. I'm hoping he's looking great now, feeling great now, and I hope he contributes on Sunday because it's going to be an emotional moment for him. And maybe, hopefully, he gives the boost that they need to get out of this 4-week slump that they've been in, and that's putting it nicely. I do think that the lights are too bright when the Guardians play the Yankees. And I've watched these first two games. You see them during the regular season. The problem is that, you know, a lot of these guys with these other teams, you know, if I play well here, the Yankees will like me. The Yankees, they'll have their eye on me here. And then once you become a member of the Yankees, I mean, let's be honest, you get paid. Like, there's guys where it doesn't really work out for them, like Carl Pavano, but you get paid enough money where your children, your children's children, and more likely your children's children's children will never know want. I mean, they're the Yankees. And you don't do that in any other real sport. I don't really, maybe a little bit with the Garden. Maybe a little bit. Maybe the Jared Allen thing a couple of years ago. Maybe that's it. But you don't see it like that. Where in Major League Baseball, it's like, well, if I play really well and these things don't go our way, well, you know, eventually I play well enough where maybe the Yankees will pick me up. And I do think that the lights are a little bit too bright. Like, how can the Yankees play like that and that happen? If you were playing, what's another contending team in the American League? The Tigers do the same thing. You think that they're doing that with the Tigers doing that? The base running errors? John Sterling quoted, said that they run the bases like a bunch of drunks last night. They had two guys picked off for stupid base running errors.
Oh, yeah.
Gerrit Cole was not the Cy Young winner that we know of. He got hit around in that game last night.
I think, Kenny,
and they still can't live up to that moment.
That's the hardest pill to swallow is I don't think any of us. This isn't this isn't sore loser stuff. We know.
I'm a sore loser,
When we were losing to Golden State when they had Kevin Durant. All right. Clearly a better team. Does anybody think the Yankees are clearly a better team? Yeah, they have a better lineup right now, but are they clearly a better? Look at who they have batting cleanup. They've got a guy who can't get a hit that's batting cleanup. Their catcher stinks. Like, this is not the Yankee for all the money they spend. This is not some imposing, overwhelming, we got no shot against them lineup.
Here's Sterling last night, John Sterling. And I know not everybody's a fan. I'm a huge fan of John Sterling. Hit it.
A bouncer. And Rizzo is going to be picked off. He's in the middle between second and third. Hedges now throws to second. On the way to third, back to second, back to third, tagged out, end of inning. Boy, if that wasn't the Yankees, that's what they do, run the bases like drunks. Well, Glaber will lead off the next inning.
Audio courtesy at WFAN. And you listen to some of those guys, like, they're not thrilled with the way they're playing because they perpetually expect more over.
Not exactly a flawless rundown either, by the way. You know, Jose threw that ball a little too early.
They almost got away from him.
Hey, did they figure it out?
They did. They
got it. They figured it out. Like, of all the things that I have a problem with, they don't rise to the occasion there. Like, that's why it's so important to get them back. Like, obviously, you're in must-win situations from here on out, basically. It's so important to get them back and get in front of your own home crowd just so you can relax a little bit. Because every time they go there, it just becomes a major league pain in the ass.
Well, you're dropping pop flies, Kenny. You're dropping pop flies. You got Brennan in the outfield trying to, with his bare hand, trying to pick that up. Didn't know how to play the carom. I will tell you, Josh Naylor looked fleet of foot trying to jump and get to that ball. He missed it by this much on that liner. I couldn't believe Naylor had
those
ups.
Should I say what I was willing to say before the show? Should I say it on the air?
Go ahead.
All right, I will admit, so many of you guys have sent me enough pictures that he does look a little thicker than he used to. I'm very sensitive to other people's bodies. You know, I believe in fat shaming myself.
Is that the champagne over the last 2 weeks?
Champagne doesn't put that much. You know, I'm not going to say that. If I ate champagne, if I drank champagne to that level, do you think that I, you know what? Never mind. I'm not saying that.
Could be a lot of added sugar in some of that.
He was 2 for 2 in his first two at-bats last night. I mean, come on. It's 2 for 4 on the night.
Oh, he popped one up. He drove a run home, and he slammed his bat in disbelief.
That's where I'm at right now.
He's such a competitor.
I just say, hey, come on. So-and-so's 2 for 4. Come on. That's my argument. That's my whole argument to get back into the series. Come on. Hey, come on. All right, fine.